Now, every Tuesday morning in the lead up to the big climate conference in Glasgow, COP26, we're talking to someone about how we can make a difference to our planet. Today, we're joined by Alex Kalnan. Alex is the chief executive of EB Charging, which is based in St Albans in Porter's Wood. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now we're going to be talking about something that is really a hot topic, isn't it? Electric vehicles. But first of all, tell us a little bit about EB charging and what you do.
Electric vehicles certainly is. It's the word of the moment, words at the moment. So this EB charging was actually originally founded looking at how we could electrify taxis. And the idea started very locally. Could we electrify taxis in St Albans and Hertfordshire? And as we developed the business and I got more involved in the industry, realised that actually that the key challenge was really one of charging infrastructure. And so the business plan and the ambitions broadened slightly to look at all kinds of vehicles and all kinds of chargers. And so as the business has grown over the last few years, we've really focused on working very closely with partners, both in the public and in the private sector, and understanding as much as possible using data where we can, how we can help partners to electrify their vehicles. And those vehicles can be privately owned vehicles, they can be large fleets, and they can be doing any kind of activity across any industry. And each of those presents some different challenges, but it's an industry that the technology has really developed at pace. And we are right now on the cusp of a very large growth in this industry. I'm sure we'll come on to talk about some of the factors around this in terms of the government drivers, but certainly the technology has moved on in leaps and bounds. And I think so too has the general public awareness of EVs generally.
Yes, well, you mentioned the government. Of course, we're all going to have to think about electric vehicles because there's a 2030 deadline for the stopping of sales of, is it 2030? Yeah, 2030 or 2035? 2030, yeah, of sales of petrol and diesel vehicles. So we're all going to have to be thinking about electric. Why is electric so much better than using petrol or diesel?
I think there's probably a range of arguments. And what's been interesting in the time that we've been in the industry is what's, how each argument has gained traction. So I think initially there was a very strong focus, and I think it resonated well with people around air quality and the impact on public health. I think it's one of those a little bit like the acceptance that smoking is bad for us and is one of those activities that the people recognize has an impact on those around you. And you can see in vehicle fumes that it's an easier concept for people to grasp. And so that certainly gained a lot of early traction, and there's been a huge amount of research linking the traffic fumes to a whole variety of health conditions. More recently, I think we've seen a growing understanding, growing awareness of the wider impact of climate change. And I think this is what has really driven particularly the government agenda, and obviously very key in the run-up to COP26 this year, looking at the bringing into these firm deadlines, particularly the likes of 2030. So climate change is certainly a key driver for this, as well as air quality. But I think one that's often forgotten in the mix, but really shouldn't be understated here, is the noise impact, or perhaps the reduction in the noise impact of vehicles. A huge proportion of our population lives on or very close to busy roads. And if you look at around St Albans, I've lived here my whole life and on various busy roads in and out of the city centre. And the noise reduction that comes with electric vehicles really shouldn't be understated. And there's an awful lot of World Health Organization research into the reduction in stress that's permits in a population. So I think there's a number of benefits around health and the environment, and I think there's also some very key technology benefits that come with this as well. We'll link to this topic very closely is the introduction of renewable technologies, and one of the key challenges they have to overcome is their intermittency. I think that's where you can start to blend the intermittency of renewables with some of the advantages that electric vehicles bring in when you can charge those vehicles and what you can do around balancing the grid.
Right. I mean, I think there is a point there, isn't there, which is that absent renewable ways of generating electricity, all we're doing is exporting the pollution and the impact on the planet from one part of the country to another part where the electricity is generated, right? So we have to get this to be renewable. But the amount of electricity we're going to need is going to skyrocket, isn't it? How are we going to do most of that from renewable sources?
Well, I think it's an interesting point to the first point you made there is even if we waved a magic wand and electrified all of our vehicle fleet without changing our grid generation, we would see a very marked improvement in public health, going back to that air quality perspective, just removing an awful lot of vehicle emissions from the city centre. We would see a benefit. But you are absolutely right. If we're going to do this, it has to be a wholesale change towards net zero. And that does mean looking at power generation as well. I think that's where one of the interesting points come in is if you look at the national grids do a series of very complex energy modelling in the future energy scenarios piece that they release, I think every year, possibly twice a year. They've been very clear for quite a number of years now that that electric vehicles are not only a challenge that we are well equipped to meet from a generation perspective, but will actually bring a huge boost to the way in which our energy grid operates, because you can do an awful lot in terms of shifting that demand, that generation. But also, as the technology continues to develop, you can start to do some of the interesting aspects around vehicle to grid, which means you can start to actually return power that's stored in that battery back into buildings.
Fascinating. Now, you probably spend most of your working life thinking about these kind of things, but how are we going to get the electricity to the vehicles? Because, you know, if you look at somewhere like St Albans, for example, an awful lot of people park their cars on the street. So what are we going to do? Run extension cables out across the pavement and try and charge our cars up that way? How's it going to work?
Unfortunately, there are many pictures circulating on the internet of exactly those sorts of things with extension leads trailing, sometimes multiple extension leads trailing a long way down the street.
It's not safe. Don't do it. Thing to say. But how are we going to get to a point where it is feasible for people in St Albans, for example, to charge their car while it's sat at home?
And this is a very key challenge. It's actually an area that an awful lot of our time is focused on within local authorities. And so whilst we do, as a business, install chargers into people's homes, they tend to be more for fleets who've got home start vehicles. The residential charging that we do for those who don't have access to either a driveway or dedicated parking is very much looking at how you can leverage some of the existing on-street infrastructure. So we have quite a large deployment of chargers in Brighton using lamp columns. There's obviously existing power there. And again, along the similar lines of the energy transition, our street lights moving towards LED means there's more capacity in that street lighting network. But equally, you can install chargers on street, or one of the activities that a number of local authorities are looking at is where you've got car parks that are underutilized during evening and overnight is actually, can you combine a better utilization of a public asset with also provision of charging infrastructure for those who don't have off-street parking? So by no means is it a simple fix. And I think one of the things that as a business we very much focus on is there's not often, in fact, we've not seen a one-size-fits-all solution. You have to look at the different technologies we've got available and what is the best fit for that particular use case. But I think the key message from our side is that the technology really is there to do this. It's just about selecting the right piece of kit to create the change that you need.
All right, so let's talk about us as consumers and purchasers of vehicles. You know, should we if we think about a hybrid, because we're worried about the range of electric vehicles, you're basically driving around a heavy battery everywhere. Is that really the right thing to do? Where is vehicle range headed? Can we really honestly buy an electric vehicle and expect to go on our staycation to Yorkshire? Where are we at right now? And where might we be in a couple of years' time?
That is a broad question. I think the key message here is that when you strip this back and look at the data, EVs today on the market are more than comfortable for the vast majority of trips and the vast majority of all the trips that people do. I think when you look at, and this obviously varies very significantly depending on where you are in the country and depending on what particular industry you're in, but the average daily commute, at least according to the Department of Transport travel surveys, is I think somewhere around about 20, 25 miles. And so if you think you're driving from home, and if you're able to charge at home, start the day with a fully charged battery, and you're driving to a place of work, you're then parking your vehicle there for a period of time and then driving a short journey back again. There's actually very significant number of opportunities during a day to charge that. And so if you look at the battery range that you get now, whilst the first sort of mainstream, if you can consider things like the Nissan Leaf being sort of the first mainstream contender, gave you a range perhaps of say 70 to 80 miles. That actually already equated for most of the trips that people would do. In fact, when I started EB, I was working part-time in Reading and driving the 65 miles from St. Albans to Reading each day in my Nissan Leaf. Now, some of those trips were a little close for comfort, especially in the dead of winter. You very quickly learn exactly how far a mile is. But if you look at vehicles now that are on the road, they're all pushing up over 200 miles and will recharge on the rapid chargers, and particularly moving towards the ultra chargers, these very quick recharges in less than an hour for a full charge as well. So your ability to drive very significant distances around the UK is already able to be met right now. And I think to your point around what, you know, as consumers can we do, is to really understand how far do you drive? And I guess perhaps maybe to slightly alter the question is how could I adopt an EV? If we talk about the points we raised at the start around this is genuinely a good thing for society, then the question perhaps is, rather than being, is there a like for like option, that actually what, if I am going to make a change, what how big a change would that be to be able to adopt an EV?
Okay, so perhaps a bit of a change in approach to our journeys might be required, but it sounds like the range is going up. Now, home charging points, it's not advisable to just plug it into a socket, is it? So unless the socket's on your ring main and very close. So there are various options available, aren't there? And quite a few companies out there. Can you just very briefly explain the difference between there's a 3 kilowatt, 7 kilowatt and a 22 kilowatt option, isn't there? What are we supposed to go for at home?
Yes, and this is unfortunately like any new technology, these things are often more complicated than they need to be. So fundamentally, the limiting, or the two key limiting factors, are the spare capacity available in your house, and then also the rate at which your car can charge. I think that's one of those things that's often confused in terms of what kind of charger should I have? I think that the key point is, whilst there's a whole variety of manufacturers in the market, this end of the market is a much simpler piece of kit to build. And so we've got a far more competitive space. It's also a market that's growing very quickly. So as you'd imagine, that attract an awful lot of companies into the sector. The difference from 3 to 7 kilowatts in terms of the hardware you buy is I'm not aware of people actually offering a 3 kilowatt only charger. They all tend to be 7 kilowatt chargers that are load limited, right, to reduce that slightly. The 7 to 22 is often the slightly deceiving point, because you think if I'm recharging at 22 kilowatts, then clearly my battery is going to be charged much quicker. I think that's a key message that a lot of the vehicle manufacturers perhaps aren't explaining as clearly as they should be, because we often have this question asked of us, is that power is supplied as AC power and it's stored in your battery as DC. So it has to be converted by the car, in this case, through those chargers. You do get bigger and higher power chargers, those big phone box sized that you see at motorway services. Those are DC chargers, so they do the conversion themselves, which they put DC power straight into your battery. That's why it happens so much quicker. Most cars in the UK can only convert power at about 7 kilowatts. Some will do 11, not many do 22. So actually, having a charger that charges at 22 kilowatts, you may not actually be able to, your car might not be able to take power that quickly. So it's one of those things, it's really worth talking with installers, with the vehicle manufacturer, and understanding exactly what can your car do. And then say the other piece, just to round it off then, is what's available in your home. Commonly, you can get about a 7 kilowatts comfortably from a house. It depends. You may have three-phase power connected to your house, which means you'll be able to get a bit more.
Right. Okay. Well, that's slightly demystified. I'm sure it's going to get more mystifying before it gets simpler, isn't it? It's like all these things with new stuff. But I also read that electric power is actually quite a bit cheaper than running on petrol. Is that right?
It certainly is. I think for a number of reasons. Certainly, the cost of electricity is one aspect to this. There's clearly a number of incentives around grant incentives. You're certainly going to see for us in St. Albans, if you're driving into London, then you've got discounts in the congestion zone, and we've got a number of clean air zones springing up around the country. And then I think the other side, which particularly for fleets are able to exploit this and build this into their business case, is the much lower maintenance cost of operating EVs. They have a fraction of the number of moving parts that a petrol or a diesel car have. And so if you've got fewer things moving, then you've got fewer things that can break and fewer things that need to be replaced following wear and tear. You don't have oil filters to be replaced in the same way. So there are quite a number of benefits that tie up into the commercial case. I think that's where we're seeing the faster adoption happening through fleets, where you're slightly better able to look at the whole life cost of an EV. And that's where there are very, very significant savings to be had across the life of a vehicle. There is, for most EVs, there's still a small premium to pay on the upfront purchase price. But certainly when you look across the life of the vehicle, then there are some very significant savings to be had.
That's great. And well, here's hoping that we wind the clock forward, say, let's say 5 years, the Peahen Junction is no longer breaching World Health Organization guidelines for air pollution, and we're all living in a quieter St. Albans. That would be pretty good, wouldn't it? And that's just looking at it from a personal point of view. So, Alex, thank you so much. I'm sure when we talk, even in a year's time, this is going to have moved on a lot, and I'd like to catch up again. But thanks for sparing some time with us this morning. That's Alex Calden. Alex is the CEO of EB Charging, based here in St. Albans. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you very much.